Hello, I'm KRCB News Director Bruce Robinson. California Governor Jerry Brown delivered his annual State of the State speech at the state capitol in Sacramento this morning. In his 20-minute address, he declared that California is, quote, on the mend and on the move, despite continuing fiscal challenges. He also made the case for his proposals, budget cuts and temporary taxes, to address those challenges. KRCB is now pleased to present the governor's State of the State address.
Fellow dignitaries and fellow citizens, as required by the state constitution, I'm reporting to you this morning on the condition of our state. Before I do, I just want to make one notation. I noticed that Connie and Mr. Huff put out their critique of my speech 24 hours ago. Now, I'll let you know a little secret. My speech wasn't finished 24 hours ago. And I do want to say, I didn't know that you were psychics and that you possessed the powers of precognition and clairvoyance. After the speech, I want to check with you on some stock tips. We could use them, especially in the state. Look, putting it as simply as I can, California is on the mend. Last year, we were looking at a structural deficit of $20 billion. It was a real mess. But you rose to the occasion, and together, we shrunk state government, reduced our borrowing costs, and transferred key functions to local government closer to the people. The result is a problem one-fourth of what we confronted last year. My goal then was to balance budget cuts with a temporary extension of existing taxes if the voters approve. You made the reductions and some very difficult decisions, but the four Republican votes needed to put the tax measure on the ballot were not there. So we're left with unfinished business, closing the remaining gap. Again, I propose cuts and temporary taxes. Neither is popular, but both must be done. In a world still reeling from the collapse of the financial system, it makes no sense to spend more than we have. The financial downgrading of the United States, as well as of several governments in Europe, should be warning enough. It is said that the road to hell is paved with good intentions, and digging ourselves into a deep financial hole to do good is a bad idea. In this time of uncertainty, prudence and paying down debt is the best policy. For my part, I'm determined to press ahead with substantial budget cuts and my tax initiative. The cuts are not ones I like, but the situation demands them. As for the initiative, it's fair, it's temporary, and it's half of what people were paying in 2010. And it will protect our schools and guarantee in the Constitution funding for the public safety programs we transferred to local government. With enough time, we can and should devise more permanent tax reform. But for now, we should finish the job of bringing spending into line with revenues. Putting our fiscal house in order is good stewardship, and it helps regain the trust of the people. It also builds confidence in California as a place to invest and to realize one's dreams. Contrary to those critics who fantasize that California is a failed state, I see unspent potential and incredible opportunity. Every decade since the 60s, dystopian journalists write stories on the impending decline of our economy, our culture, and our politics. Yes, it's fair to say that California is turbulent, less predictable, and, well, different. Yet, look at the facts. After the mortgage bubble burst in 2007, California lost 1 million jobs, much of it driven by the over-leveraged construction industry and its financial partners in the under-regulated mortgage industry. The result is a recovery far slower than after the previous six national recessions. But now we're coming back. In 2011, California personal income grew by almost $100 billion and 230,000 jobs were created, a rate much higher than the nation as a whole. Contrary to those declinists who sing of Texas and bemoan our woes, California is still the land of dreams as well as the Dream Act. And thank you for sending me that. California is the place where Apple, Intel, Hewlett-Packard, Oracle, Qualcomm, Twitter, Facebook, and countless other creative companies all began. It's home to more Nobel laureates and venture capital investment than any other state. In 2010, California received 48% of U.S. venture capital investments, and in the first months, 3 months of last year, it rose even higher to 52%. There is more than four times, that is more than four times greater than the next recipient, Massachusetts. As for new patents, California inventors were awarded almost four times as many as inventors from the next state, New York. California has problems, but rumors of its demise are greatly exaggerated. The year 2012 presents plenty of opportunity, and if we work together, we can stimulate jobs, build renewable energy, reduce pollution and greenhouse gases, launch the nation's only high-speed rail system, reach agreement on a plan to fix the Delta, improve our schools, reform our pensions, and make sure that prison realignment is working to protect public safety and reduce recidivism. Last year, I appointed a top advisor with an impressive record in the private sector and charged him with finding out what doesn't work for businesses in this state and how to fix it. What he heard consistently was that business needed an effective champion to navigate the state's plethora of complex laws and regulations, which can discourage investment and job creation. You enacted a law to restructure our Office of Business Development and place it in the governor's office. Under the name GoBiz, we now have a point of contact at the highest level for businesses large and small. More than that, the GoBiz office is staffed with people who understand what it's like to be in business, and they stand ready to intervene and give real help to get businesses open and projects off the ground. Already, California is leading the nation in creating jobs in renewable energy and the design and construction of more efficient buildings and new technologies. Our state keeps demanding more efficient structures, cars, machines, and electric devices. We do that because we understand that fossil fuels, particularly foreign oil, creates ever-rising costs to our economy and to our health. It's true that the renewable energy sector is small relative to the overall economy, but it pays good wages and will only grow bigger as oil prices increase and the effects of climate change become more obvious and expensive. I've set a goal of 20,000 megawatts of renewable energy by 2020. You've laid the foundation by adopting the requirement that one-third of our electricity come from renewable sources by that date. This morning, I can tell you we're on track to meet that goal and substantially exceed it. In the last 2 years alone, California has permitted over 16,000 megawatts of solar, wind, and geothermal energy projects. In the beginning of the computer industry, jobs were numbered in the thousands. Now they're in the millions. The same thing will happen with green jobs, and California is positioned perfectly to reap the economic benefits that will inevitably flow. California also leads the nation in cleaning up the air, encouraging electric vehicles, and reducing pollution and greenhouse gases. Our vehicle emission standards, which have always set the pace, now have been adopted by the federal government for the rest of the country. Under AB 32, California has stepped out and crafted a bold plan to deal with climate change and foreign oil dependency. The plan will require less carbon in our fuels, more efficient technologies across a broad swath of businesses, and a carefully designed cap and trade system that uses market incentives instead of prescriptive mandates. As a result, California is attracting billions of dollars in clean tech venture capital investments. In 2011, almost 40% of such investments were made in California, making our state not only the leader in the nation but in the entire world. My commitment is to continue these innovative programs and build on them in the coming year in every way I can. Now, just as bold is our plan to build a high-speed rail system connecting the northern and southern part of our state. This is not a new idea. As governor the last time, I signed legislation to study the concept. Now, 30 years later, we're within weeks of a revised business plan that will enable us to begin initial construction before the year is out. President Obama strongly supports the project and has provided the majority of funds for the first phase. It's now your decision to evaluate the plan and decide what action to take. Without hesitation, I urge your approval. If you believe that California will continue to grow as I do, and that millions more people will be living in our state, this is a wise investment. Building new runways and expanding our airports and highways is the only alternative. That is not cheaper and will face even more political opposition. Those who believe that California is in decline will naturally shrink back from such a strenuous undertaking. I understand that feeling, but I don't share it, because I know this state and the spirit of the people who chose to live here. California is still the gold mountain that Chinese immigrants in 1848 came across the Pacific to find. The wealth is different, derived as it is, not from mining the Sierras, but from the creative imagination of those who invent and build and generate the ideas that drive our economy forward. Critics of the high-speed rail project abound, as they often do when something of this magnitude is proposed. During the 1930s, the Central Valley Water Project was called a fantastic dream that will not work. The master plan for the interstate highway system in 1939 was derided as New Deal jitterbug economics. In 1966, then Mayor Johnson of Berkeley called BART a billion-dollar potential fiasco. Similarly, the Panama Canal was for years thought to be impractical. And Benjamin Disraeli himself said of the Suez Canal, totally impossible. Well, the critics were wrong then, and they're wrong now. And we're going to build the first phase so that it in of itself is worth the $2 billion of state money that we're going to invest. Nothing else happened, and it will. Another issue we must tackle is water. Last week, Secretary of the Interior Ken Salazar met here in Sacramento with those in my administration who are working to complete the Bay Delta Conservation Plan. Together, we agreed that by this summer, we should have the basic elements of the project we need to build. This is something my father worked on, and then I worked on as well, decades ago. We know more now and are committed to the dual goals of restoring the Delta ecosystem and ensuring a reliable water supply. This is an enormous project. It will ensure water for 25 million Californians and for millions of acres of farmland, as well as 100,000 acres of new habitat for spawning fish and other wildlife. To get it done will require time, political will, and countless permits from state and federal agencies. I invite your collaboration and constructive engagement. Next, I want to say something about our schools. They consume more tax dollars than any other government activity, and rightly so, as they have a profound effect on our future. Since everyone goes to school, everyone thinks they know something about education. And in a sense, they do. But that doesn't stop experts and academics and foundation consultants from offering their ideas, usually labeled reform and regularly changing at 10-year intervals, on how to get kids learning more and better. It's salutary and even edifying that so much interest is shown in the next generation. Nevertheless, and a state with 6 million students, 300,000 teachers, deep economic divisions, and 100 different languages, some humility is called for. In that spirit, I offer these thoughts. First, responsibility must be clearly delineated between the various levels of power that have a stake in our educational system. What most needs to be avoided is concentrating more and more decision-making at the federal or state level. For better or worse, we depend on elected school boards and the principals and teachers they hire. To me, we should set broad goals and have a good accountability system, leaving the real work to those closest to the students. Yes, we should demand continuous improvement in meeting our state standards, but we should not impose excessive or detailed mandates. My budget proposes to replace categorical programs with a new weighted student formula that provides a basic level of funding with additional money for disadvantaged students and those struggling to learn English. This will give more authority to local school districts to fashion the kind of programs they see their students need. It will also create transparency, reduce bureaucracy, and simplify complex funding streams. Given the cutbacks to education in recent years, it's imperative that California devote more tax dollars to this most basic of public services. If we're successful in passing the temporary taxes that I've proposed and the economy continues to expand, schools will be in a much stronger position. No system, however, works without accountability. In California, we have detailed state standards and lots of tests. Unfortunately, the resulting data is not provided until after the school is over. Even today, as I speak to you, the ranking of schools based on tests taken in April and May of 2011 is not available. I believe it's time to reduce the number of tests and get the results to teachers, principals, and superintendents in weeks, not months. With timely data, principals and superintendents can better mentor and guide teachers as well as make sound evaluations of their performance. I believe we also need a qualitative system of assessments, such as a site visitation program where each classroom is visited, observed, and evaluated. I will work with the State Board of Education to develop this proposal. The House of Education is divided by powerful forces and strong emotions. My role as governor is not to choose sides, but to listen, to engage, and to lead. I'll do that. I embrace both reform and tradition, but not complacency. My hunch is that principals and teachers know the most, but I'll take good ideas from wherever they come. As for pensions, I put forth my 12-point proposal. Examine it, improve it, but please, take up the issue and do something real. I'm committed to pension reform because I believe there's a real problem. Three times as many people as are retiring as are entering the workforce. This arithmetic doesn't add up. In addition, benefits, contributions, and the age of retirement all have to balance. I don't believe they do today. Start tomorrow. You work for 30 years, are you going to live to 80, 90, 110? How much is that? How many people are retired? How many people are working? How many people are coming along? How does it all work out? Anybody tells me that you feel absolutely confident that 40 or 50 years from now, things are all going to be paid for, are not looking at the numbers and the other comparable investments. As for prison alignment, we're just at the beginning. The cooperation of sheriffs, police chiefs, probation officers, district attorneys, and local officials have been remarkable. But we have much to do to protect public safety and reduce recidivism, and together we'll get it done. It's one thing to pass a law, and it's quite another to implement and make it work. As I see it, that's my job as governor and as chief executive. Make the operations of government work efficiently, honestly, in the people's interest. With your help, that's what we'll do in 2012 and prove once again that the declinists about California are wrong. We're on the move, we're on the mend, let's get it done. Thank you.
Governor Jerry Brown delivering his 2012 State of the State speech in Sacramento this morning. Even before he spoke, two of the legislature's Republican leaders had prepared a much shorter response and critique, which is what the governor was referring to at the outset of his talk. Here's what the GOP representatives had to say.
Hello, I'm Senate Republican Leader Bob Huff.
And I'm Assembly Republican Leader Connie Conway. Today, Governor Brown shared his vision for California for the year ahead. Republicans were eager to hear his ideas to the many challenges facing our state. Unfortunately, the governor's vision is centered around one thing, higher taxes. Governor Brown says the sky will fall if Californians don't agree to a $35 billion tax increase. You and I know this simply isn't so. It's time for Sacramento to be honest with Californians. The good news is that our economy is starting to recover. Last year, Republicans fought to lower taxes by just over $1,000 for the average family of four. Just as Republicans have said time and time again, if you let more people keep their hard-earned money, they'll use it to help our economy grow. And guess what happened? Tax rates went down, but tax revenues grew by $8.4 billion. And revenue will grow even more next year, $4.5 billion without tax hikes. But the bad news is that Sacramento wants to spend all this new money and then some. They propose growing government spending by 7% next year. Democrats want to raise your taxes, not protect our schools, but actually to grow government. In fact, the governor has targeted our children's classrooms for almost 90% of his proposed trigger cuts if his taxes fail. This is wrong. It all comes down to a question of priorities, and our priorities are the priorities of California's working families.
For Republicans, our children's education and keeping our communities safe will always be our top priorities. We will continue to oppose the governor's public safety realignment plan, which basically amounts to the early release of thousands of dangerous criminals. And this year, the governor wants to shift even more felons out of state prison to our overcrowded local jails. You shouldn't be asked to pay higher taxes to let criminals out of jail before they pay their debt to society. In order to generate new revenue for essential programs, the legislature must make job creation a priority. It's great to hear our Democrat friends talk about jobs, but the new taxes and regulations they propose actually hurt the economy. Only by getting government out of the way can we bring back jobs and get people working again. Finally, every dollar we spend for pensions is a dollar we don't have to spend for our public schools or for local law enforcement. So we will work across party lines to enact strong public pension reform. Governor Brown has proposed a public employee pension reform plan that is actually a good starting point. Republicans are ready to enact his pension changes, but legislative Democrats are stalling it because their special interest union allies don't like the reforms. The problems facing California this year are tough, and the solutions will not be easy. But by working together and focusing on what matters for hardworking Californians, we can make a difference and get our state back on track.
As I have said many times, Republicans are the last line of defense for California taxpayers. That's a responsibility we take seriously. Visit our new website, CaliforniaBudgetFactCheck.com, to learn what the governor's budget plan means for you and your family and ensure that your voice is heard.
We hope you'll stand with us throughout this year's budget debate. Thank you for listening, and God bless our Golden State.
That was the Republican response to the 2012 State of the State speech delivered by Governor Brown today. We also heard his full address immediately prior to their comments. This has been a special presentation of KRCB News in association with our colleagues at California Capital News in Sacramento. I'm Bruce Robinson.